This is the 24th of June, 2020, in the Lucy Coleman studio, PJ. We're talking about courage. It's been a while. I've completed a webcast, but I couldn't put it up. I didn't have the courage to do it. Isn't it something? Because I'm talking about courage, and I'm still discovering, at my age, that I don't have the courage to do what I know I should do. And let me share with you why. Not afraid. But apprehensive. Because whenever, you know, that's like jumping back to a webcast or a conversation that I had with you before on why I became a pastor. I didn't want to do those things. I didn't want to jump in anyone's life. I didn't have the courage to do that. It was only through God's Spirit that I did what I did in ministry. Successful. As it may seem. Wait a minute, my dog just opened up my office door. Hold it. Harcourt. I am in the middle of doing a webcast, and you came in, kicked the door open, and jumped up. You should see him. What's the matter? You want to play with the old man? Is that what you want to do? Courage. I had courage after Broman passed away to go to the dog pound and get a Harcourt. And I'm glad that I did. Yes. Yeah, I called his name and he jumped up. He says, play with me. Play with me. I'm not gonna say too much about courage. I think we all know what it means to have it. I'm not a coward, but I pick my battles. The battle that I think African-American males, especially the young ones, are confronting them is their annihilation if they don't stand up. And because of these African-American males who basically gave their lives to open up our eyes, if you can really feel me on that, gave their lives in order that our eyes might be open. Because when a black man died before, you would find a lot of black people say, man, that's that nigga's problem. It ain't mine. See, I know. See, I used to be there too. I grew out of that. Before I got married, after I got into the Army and I was sent to a foreign country while my fellow American soldiers were in another foreign country shedding their blood, I stopped using that term nigger like that because I thought I had a consciousness about who I was and who my people was. So getting into the ministry and loving black people was an easy thing for me to do. But when I look at the rewards of doing all of that, I really can't. Oh, little Harcourt spinning around in circles. Yes, you are. He's saying, you need to get up and play with me. No, I'm going to finish this. What? I had time to do this early. Oh, there you go. There you go. You know what he's doing? He is literally on the floor, spinning around, chasing his tail. That's how much fun we have over here. I had another visitor. Another young man wanted to come by. I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't do it. I said, what are you doing out here? There's a pandemic. And you know, I know because I go to some of my young friends' Facebook page. I'm jet skiing over here. I'm doing that. I'm doing. Be careful. The counts are going up. See, then you say, oh, well, you old man, you ain't got nothing, nowhere to go, nothing going on in your life. You just sitting around waiting to die somewhere. I don't know what's the matter with you, boy. I'm planning on living longer than you, but I'm wise. An old scripture that I used to quote, Be wise as a serpent, but harmless as a dove. That's what I am. I'm wise. Or I may seem like a fool to you. I look way down to see the future before it even takes place, and boom. Well, I would do it because I had the gift of discernment in the church. I'd mention it to the people in the church. I have to be very careful that I don't do that in my life now, because still the way it is, people can't take it. They can't take it. They're not ready for the truth. Remember that movie when that Marine said, "You can't handle the truth"? That was the best scene in that movie. That was a good movie. But most people can't handle it. And I was just on a Zoom. I won't say what Zoom. I was just on a Zoom thing. My dog is exploring my office. And I was listening to some people talk about how things should be and how they are now and the mistakes they made in the past. And I was thinking. And I said, I didn't make mistakes like that in the past, because when I was a young man, I thought about everything I did before I did it, thought about everything I said before I said it. See, that didn't take courage. That just took some actuality. You know how life is. You don't do things that can harm you. I know. Young man came by and I said, "What are you doing by here?" He says, "I miss being around people. Real people." That's what he said. "I miss being around real people." I said, "Hey, man, there's a pandemic going on." I said, "You know I want to be around you too, but I can't do this. I don't know where you've been, who you've been around. I don't want to be infected by you, so you can't come into my house." Plain as that. See? Somebody asked me, "Oh, well, if your daughters came by..." No, they stay a distance also. My daughter came by to see me on Father's Day. You think I hugged her? Elbowed her? I said, "Baby, I'm doing fine. Thanks for coming by." Because she could kill me. "Oh, don't say that. You negative." You know what? You can take your positive thinking self... See, here again, that's the way I was raised. We didn't have no... No dreamers. And I'm not mad at these young people, because a lot of them are dreamers. And I'd love to see their dream fulfilled. I want to live till I'm 100. I want to see them get that job. I want to see everything. I want to see everything turn into what it's supposed to turn into. I want to see that too. I'm for a good Disney movie. I'm for all that. I have the courage to step ahead and believe that good could come out of bad. That something can come out of nothing. Oh, I'd love to see all the negative monuments of the world broken down and all the people of the world be free. But you know what? Damn it, that is not going to happen. Never. No, Harcourt, you cannot come in here and then run out and chase after a dog. Oh, he hears the dogs barking and he's looking for a way out. He has radar ears. You want me to let you out now? See now, on this nice overcast night. Oh, my dog is just... All right, come on. I got to let you out. Because I know you want to go visit the dog. Go ahead. Go visit the dog. Uh-huh. Go get him. Hardcore's a mess, bad as I am. Sorry for the interruption. But I can see the way they think. I was watching a movie, King Arthur, one of the latest renditions, an English film. And it's clear, it's based upon the story of King Arthur and the Knights of the Round Table. Guinevere and the sword taken out of the rock, and the king coming up as a peasant and getting the kingdom. And I watched that, and I know the story because I've been taught that story my entire life. As a lad, as a young man, When I went to high school, you had to read about that. Those are the books that they gave us to read. They didn't give us any Alex Haley books. They didn't give us any books on African history. I never was called upon to write anything about Africa. As a matter of fact, the only thing that I ever saw in a school book about my people, it was a history book talking about the history of America. And when it got to, I would go to the page and look at the pictures of the slave ships and the slaves tied up, because that's the only record that they had of Africans coming over here as slaves. They showed where the Indians came from the plains and where they had their teepees and where the white men came over and the Nina and the Pinta and the Santa Maria. But when I was in the second, third, and fourth grade, and I remember those grades explicitly, there was just the pictures of us on the slave ship, and not even a whole paragraph. The Negro peoples were brought here as servants for the white people. Now, when I read that as a kid, it didn't move me, negative or positive, because quiet is kept. I didn't know what a servant was. Now, I didn't start seeing slave movies until I was in high school. And, you know, I'd go downtown to see a movie, and they'd have a movie about this big Mandingo brother, and the white man was beating him. And I said, man, what era did this take place in? Because I wasn't educated. I went to grade school, had mom and dad taking care of me. I didn't think like that. Now, these kids are coming up completely different. And they got so much in their little heads, and they actually have the courage enough to face the day that they're confronted with. I didn't, because I didn't even know about half the dumb shit that was going on. Okay. And me becoming, like I said, God speaking to my heart. And God spoke to my heart. Didn't no white man speak to my heart and call me into his service. And then he spoke to me. God only spoke to me two times. I've told you that before. Once when he called me into his world of light out of my world of darkness, because my mind was closed to love. My mind was totally closed to love. I just told a guy over Facebook Messenger, we were talking about how people, he's on the East Coast, and we were talking about how people dislike each other, and that if you keep pushing people that they become like animals, and they become animalistic and strike back. I was raised with a silver spoon in my mouth, people. I, to this day, at 76, do not remember a day that this body has gone hungry. I have never gone to bed without having a substance of food in my stomach and water to drink. Never, ever. And I belong to this country, the United States of America. Mexico didn't feed me every day. I know where California is. I know whose land this originally was. I thank God for whoever built a highway and put a truck on it to bring some food here to this desert city where I live so I can eat. Thankful to God. So I don't know what experiencing poverty is, though people that know how I grew up in the projects and all that, would say, you were poor, John. It didn't bother me. I was alive. And so when God came into my life, I learned how to vent what was going on that was negative in my life, and God gave me the courage to go on. That's why I don't need a life coach. I think people that require those kinds of individuals in their lives are weak, and especially if you're a man. And I've run into quite a few weak young men, because thinking brings too much of a blighting reality to them. I don't think about life on the positive side. That's not the way I was raised. I was raised, you got the rent this month, but next month you don't know what's going to happen. Let me give you a prime example of that. When I was pastoring churches and I would give examples about how life could happen to people, pastors would get to me and they say, John, don't talk to the people like that. You're here to encourage them. I said, to what? I was there to let them know that life happens. Some of us are going to get sick of a disease and die. Some of us are going to get hit by a truck. Some of us are going to have a lovely night of kissing and hugging and passing body fluids. And the act itself will kill you. Humans have always been that way. I recall when I was going to Cal State Dominguez Hills, I had a class, and I think it was a philosophy class. I'm not sure whether it was Dr. LaCourte that taught this. I'm not sure. But they showed a film of a European being abandoned somewhere on this island, and he meets this African, or this native, Polynesian, I think he was. And it was a wonderful film because neither man could speak each other's language. And the film was in black and white. And it was a reel-to-reel projector. That's how long ago. Well, back in the 80s, you know. And I loved it whenever the professor showed films because I'd be able to see things from another person's perspective. As a matter of fact, that's why I went to college. I went to East LA College. Lucy convinced me to go to school because she said, if all you're going to do is sit around this house and watch basketball, you need to really do something. And so I went to school. And I found the idea nice because I got a chance to learn about other people. First college that I went to was East LA College. I was taking some night classes downtown LA. And then when I had to go to the college to finish up my AA degree, East LA College was primarily an Hispanic and white college. A handful of blacks went, but it was very ethnically Latina. And they had student unions and things like that. And it's where I met one of my best friends in life, Errol Carey. We were in an English class together. No, it was a sociology class. I believe it was. And we were the only two black students in the classroom. There were no black females. And we were going to night school. At that time, Errol was living, I don't know where he was living, but he was going to East LA College. I don't know how he got there. But he met me, and we started talking. We both found out that both of us were Christians. And so there's where our friendship grew. Errol came out of I won't get in. He is a story altogether brilliant. He's another chapter in my book somewhere. And he's still alive. At least I hope he is. Because Errol and I have grown old. And I think Errol was coming down with dementia or something. I'm not sure. And he wrote a book. I had it here. I can't find it. Everybody's trying to get me to write a book, but nah, I don't want to write a book. I do very well what I'm doing here. I'm in this studio, and I'm sitting here, and I'm talking to you, and I'm having a good time. I don't need to write no book. Mm-mm. No. Don't need to write a book. Living out the pages. Courage, courage, courage. It didn't take courage for me to say to the young people of this generation, you're right and I'm wrong about that. But I'm not going to go full-fledged with you because I've got to speak my heart. I don't believe in tearing down all these monuments that they're tearing down. I don't. The reason that I couldn't put the last cast up that I did on courage is because I didn't like the way I said what I said, and I thought about putting it up. That's why I'm late putting this up. And I thought about putting it up, but then I said, no, don't put up anything that someone will misrepresent or you'll be sorry that you said it. So, and it had a lot of good music on it, Don Grusham music I was playing. It was a nice hour. But I didn't like that statement, and I couldn't put it up. I'm going to tell you what the statement was. I believe that white people, like black people, have a right to hold on to their heritage without anyone telling them to lose it. That would be like someone coming to me and saying, I don't think, John, that you should be so close to black men, to love them, to help them the way you help them. I think, John, you should back off from these black men, and it'd be better if you took care of the older black guys in the rest homes. But leave these younger black men alone. Number one, it looks bad. It looks like you're trying to get at them for something else. No. Speak freely. What you think I'm trying to get at them for? A little bootay? Is that what you think this is? That's not me. I don't know who you think me is, but that's not me. I love a young black man because of the futuristic man. Wait a minute. Because of the potential of what he can do when he comes to the light of who he is without the encumbrances of the bullshit that block me blocking him. So I see the possibility in him. And I see that clearer because I am a black man. Now, I don't see this possibility of the black man through anger, because I see too much anger in the faces of black men that have been sabotaged by white men. I mean, what? What are we trying to do? Get the earth to stop rotating on its axis and to go backwards, and so that we can correct all the wrongs that happened to you, and so you can say, put on a happy face? I'm not concerned about that. See, now you might think that that's a heartless gesture coming out of this man of wisdom and whatnot. I am a man that loves to tell the truth about the way a man is. A man is a stronger man and a smarter man when he develops the ability to tell the truth to himself. White people have a right to their monuments. They have a right to that flag, whatever it stood for in their lives. Just like I have a right for my flags, my African flags, my LGBT flags, I have a right to it. Somebody doesn't like that, they can KMA. And it should be the same thing with white people. And I should have the courage enough to say that to black people that I know that are going to disagree with me. I don't give a good about you disagreeing with me. Because as human beings, we're always going to disagree with each other. That is whose image we are made in. We are Homo sapiens, men. I love to argue with young men. They've lived only 18 years and they're going to try to tell me what life is about. I laugh. It's ridiculous. I've forgotten the dreams that I had about where you're on your way to. Now, here's a problem in our community. When a sage says something like that, the sage brushes should attach themselves to him and so that they can gain the victory. But when a man chooses only a man that thinks like himself, and there are not very many men like me that think like this. Let me tell you this. You're not going to find another retired pastor in this country with a website doing what I'm doing. If it is, I want you to contact that man and tell him to get in touch with me. I would love to have lunch with him one day for real. But no, you're not going to find him. Because when I woke up, and what woke me up, was when one black man after the next black man kept getting killed and nothing was being done. I said, now most of my generation are dead, and most of my generation thought like Martin Luther King, they were pacifists. Then all of a sudden, Black Lives Matter. And guess what happened? White men tried to jump in there. They're the ones burning up these buildings, painting on buildings, destroying public property, because there are always anarchists. I remember once I was at a gay men's meeting here in Los Angeles, and a couple of anarchists came in the meeting. And my friend Jeffrey was chairing the meeting, and the anarchists began to call him names outside of the character of the way a man should do that. And I was sitting there witnessing the whole thing, and I said, well, now this is going to be interesting because I'm here amongst men. Now I'm going to see, and surely not me, because I'm one of the very few men with white hair, but I wanted to see how the men would respond to such degradation in their place. I had to call for the security guard to get the communists out of the room. If it hadn't been my meeting, me? No, I just would have said, I'm going to have to escort you brothers out of here, myself, in love, because that's not the way. Oh, my. Why do you talk about me like that, brothers? I wouldn't have needed any help. I would have done that. It would have been resolved. Because wherever you see, and I operate on a different level than a lot of people that I know, especially Black men, always think it has to turn out to be a fight somewhere. No, we don't fight each other. We assist each other in understanding exactly where we're coming from. I ask that you might have the courage to do that and to understand the effectiveness of living in such a way. Now back to courage. I can never lose my mind and bow to the masses. Let's say that the revolution comes full force, and I hope that it does, because I would love to see the day when all Black people can walk around not even caring whether the American government calls them a full citizen, but they would know exactly how full they are within their hearts. And in time, you know what? I have to admit, I haven't voted since 1972, I think. And I think since they haven't been sending me literature to vote in, I guess they figured I was dead. I think I'll register to vote. But I'm only going to check one box. One box. And that would be the presidential box. Because I have to join the population to stop Donald Trump from going any further in his madness. I have never seen such madness. Never seen it. It is as if in everything that he's doing, he is baiting us to do something terrible. But I must tell you this. I have seen Black people angry. I have seen them angry. And they don't care about the pain because our lives, we grew up, we experienced pain. Now me, I didn't. I didn't grow up with a silver spoon in my mouth, but I never experienced pain every day. Oh, I've had people talk about me, laugh at me. I've sat in the corner with my head between my legs. Yeah. But I survived because I had the courage to go on. You know what? I remember one semester I was going to grade school. And I said, ooh. I was going to 96th Street School. And I said, ooh, because I had to walk from the projects up a good sizable dirt hill. I don't know why that big dirt hill was there. And walked down that one street to get to 96th Street School. And I remember saying to myself, ooh, I hope I hurry up and grow up so I can become a young man. Because I was scared of everything. Just frightened. And now look at me, 76. Watching this revolution before it takes off. And I believe that it is. I want you people to look for phase two, because you see the cases of the virus are going up again, right? Because everybody breaking out. Oh, I got to get out. I got to have fun. I got to entertain myself. That may be the last thing you ever did. I'm going to stay sheltered in, following the rules, and doing these webcasts. And I hope that you have the courage to say what I have the courage to say. People have a right to believe what they want. They just don't have a right to choke you out, put their knee on your neck. Now, as far as reparations go, if the white man's great-great-great-great-grandchildren want to give me some reparation money for what their great-great-great-great-great-granddaddy did to my great-great-great-great-great-granddaddy, fine. Give me the give me the money. I'll take it. And I say thank you. Now, if a black man said, well, did they owe it to me? Not really, because their great-great-great-great-great-granddaddy thought that way, and they never thought that way. Their great-great-great-great-great-grandchildren never thought that way about me. So I don't know what you're talking about, black man. I want to know, why are you still doing that? See, that's why we need God. There's a verse in the Bible that says, cast all your care on him, for he cares for you. And you say, oh, I don't believe in that white man, so that's the way the white man just want me to be weak. No, no. Did you ever cast your care on God? See, y'all think I just lived a rich life. Nothing ever happened to me in my life. Shoot. I wish Dahlia was here in this studio right now. So she can tell you about the time when she went blind in her right eye on the campus of UCLA, and they were going to cut into her brain and give her brain surgery. Yeah. She just passed out walking on the campus. Her sister was with her going to school. My wife had just gotten out of the hospital, open heart surgery, could barely walk. The prayer that me and Lucy prayed on the 405 freeway on our way to UCLA Medical Center to see my daughter, who the doctor said you have to come and sign the papers because there's a spasm going on in her brain and she can't see out of one eye and we have to go in. See, you don't believe in casting your care on God. And let me tell you something. It was beautiful because I remember the prayer. I remember the moment. I'm in that car. I'm on the 405 freeway. We was only going about 15 miles an hour, bumper to bumper. On a Saturday morning, they must have been having a ball game somewhere. But it was just like a Saturday morning on the 405, packed. I began to talk to God. You know, just like I'm talking to you on this mic right now. And Lucy was sitting next to me. And I said, God, you see what you brought my wife through. because Lucy had had two or three strokes, heart attack, open heart surgery, a double bypass, and a valve in her heart that only lasted 10 years. I was told after they put it in her heart, you're not going to have her for more than 10 years. At that time, the medical science hadn't advanced to the place that it is now. I find it ironic because since that time in 2018, I had my open heart surgery. I never thought I'd have open heart surgery. The thought never crossed my mind. I'm on that freeway and I'm talking with God and I'm saying, you know, God, you gave me this woman next to me and you didn't have to. And I started crying. And I said, and I thank you because I've never been with a woman, never been with a woman, but this woman like that. And then I told him, and you gave me two beautiful kids, two beautiful daughters, named them Talia and Leslie. And I said to God, God, right now on this freeway, you can give me a brain stroke and kill me. Kill my wife, too. And I grabbed my wife's hand. I was holding the hand. The other hand was on the steering wheel. And I said, you can kill my children. Just take all the everything I have. Just know this. I love you. I want to thank you. And I did. I told him for every meal I've eaten, all the joy that my daughter gave and everything, and please calm my heart down because I wanted to go faster than 20 miles an hour. See, and I'm just saying this for those of you that don't believe in no God, don't believe in religion. And I said, you can do whatever you want to do with us because we love you. We love everything you do for us. And I calmed down and I said, Lucy, it's going to be all right. Well, we got to the hospital, finally caught up with Leslie, and Leslie called me and told me where to park. And when I got to the back parking dock of the hospital, because I didn't, you know, Lucy couldn't walk. And so I told her, find a place where I can park, where I can go immediately into there where me and Lucy can go and see our baby, because we had to go in and sign the papers. Leslie came out in the back to meet us. And she said, Daddy, and the doctor came out behind it. And I said, how's my baby? And he said, oh, your oldest daughter, she's fine. And then he said, I have some news. I guess it's good news. And I said, what is that? And he said, about 15 to 20 minutes ago, the trauma that was affecting your daughter ended. I asked him what time, and he told me, and it was the exact same time that I was talking to God on the 405 freeway. I may have had this on another clip on my webcast, but I'm putting it up here again so that you know. Listen, I believe in that God who my daughter could see again. Her equilibrium came back. They couldn't find where it came from. The spot on the x-ray was gone. The doctor said, like it appeared, and 25 minutes ago, everything dried up. Now, let me tell you why everything dried up. When you tell the God of the universe, in the name of Jesus Christ, his beloved Son, the Son of God, when you speak with him like that, he will work in anything in your life. Oh, and I wasn't one of them pastors that believed in miracles, speaking in tongues and raising the dead and speaking cancer out of my life. I wasn't one of those. Because if you got cancer in your life, most likely it's going to take you out. God did not tell us to come against all these things that was coming on the earth. I know what you're trying to do. Well, that Bible verse said, if you have the faith, the grain of a mustard seed, you can say to this mountain, be thou moved. I said, yeah, that's only if you believe. And every believer loves everybody. White people, even the white people that are wrong. I got one for you now, and you can hate me. I don't care. You got to love Donald Trump to see God. All right? Chew on that. I'm done. Thanks for coming to my... And have the courage enough to tell the truth and say you die and go to hell before you love that man. And then try to tell me you working for whose community to do what? Oh, brother, cut me some slack.